You started talking about some amazing performances.
So the ones that are that really kind of stick for me, I suppose, were so there were other Gloria shows. So Gloria did A Vision of Love Revealed in Sleep, that was the first one. And then they did still my favourite theatre show of all time, which was a show called Saracene, which had Betty Bourne and Francois de Testery and Beverly Klein playing the three eras of a castrati. And it was again this really sort of velvety, sumptuous, beautiful design, music by Nicholas Bloomfield. The design was by Robin Whitmore, and it was written by Neil, and Francois was a countertenor, and he had the most beautiful voice. Betty Bourne has a gorgeous kind of baritone, and Beverly is a soprano, I think. If you ever get a chance to see it, I would thoroughly recommend it. I think there is one grainy old recording of it somewhere, but it's just beautiful. It's from a story by Balzac, and it kind of, yeah, it charts a private performance by this castrati called, no, that would be too good if I could actually remember their name, but it's just a beautiful, beautiful show. So that was there. The Blue Lips used to come and do quite a few shows there as well. I suppose they were the beginnings of alternative drag. I think, you know, they didn't try and look like women. They tried to, they looked like kind of animations, I think, really.
Queer theatre.
Yes, yeah. I think all gay men, pretty much. And again, they were quite kind of, you know, their clothes were a little bit ragged. You know, they'd make their own costumes. Their makeup was big. So instead of what I would call, you know, feminine makeup, it was like great big glittered arched eyebrows and white face. So, yeah, kind of the roots were more, you know, more based in clowning almost, where kind of clown meets drag, I would say. Mm-hmm. And
the Blue Lips,
yeah, spelled B-L-O-O. I don't know what that means particularly, but I'm sure there's something clever. And they did a couple of shows, and then so Blue Lips played a lot, and also Split Britches,
yep,
played a lot. So that's Peggy Shaw and Lois, yep, Weaver.
And your memories of them?
Oh, I have many memories of them. Yeah, the entire drill hall was, or the women in the drill hall were kind of straight down the line. Are you a Peggy fan or are you a Lois fan?
And you were.
I was a Peggy fan. Uh-huh. But if you're listening to this, Lois, obviously I'm also a Lois fan. Because they are now my clients. So.
Okay, right.
So yeah, I do a lot of work with them.
Okay, we'll hear about that a bit more when we come to present day.
But there was a show where the Blue Lips and the Split Britches worked together. I think that was called Belle Reprieve. And that was kind of based on maybe a Tennessee Williams Count the Hot Tin Roof type thing, possibly. I'm sure you can imagine kind of Lois plays those sort of Southern Belles very well. And it was lovely. It was a really nice, and I think, you know, in terms of kind of gay meets lesbian shows, that was, you know, that was kind of perfect, really. Gay Sweatshop used to do quite a lot of stuff there. So I met David Benedict, who also came and worked there. To this day,
so this was the real heyday of the drill hall.
I think
this
so
was all the big names are part of queer performance history.
I think so. I mean, what else was on there? Elegies for Angels, Punks and Raging Queens was on there, which was a beautiful, beautiful musical, piece of musical theatre. I'm still the biggest fan of musicals, I think, probably from there. And the joy of that the joy of working there was when you loved a show, you could just go and see it every night. You could just sneak in the side, you know, and you were kind of
see something different about it each time.
Yeah, I think I saw Saracen pretty much every night it was on, and Elegies I saw, you know, maybe 10 times, and a few of the shows kind of, you know, would do a run, and then because they were so popular, they'd come back. They'd come back a few months later. And Elegies for Angels, Punks and Raging Queens was very much set in the kind of in the AIDS crisis, and it was a piece of protest. It was a kind of an angry piece of theatre, but it was just gorgeous. I loved that show. And then there were the kind of the Americans who used to come over. So Ridiculous Theatre Company came over quite a few times and did a few different shows. And again, they were fantastic. They were kind of off Broadway, I suppose, there. They originally started by Charles Ludlam, but he had died. I don't know if he did a show in London. So his boyfriend, whose name will come to me in a minute, he ran the company, and so there was kind of probably about 10 people in the cast, and they were just so adorable, and they'd come over and you'd get to hang out with them because they didn't really know that those people. So, you know, quite often you part of the role was quite hosty. Yeah. I remember Leah Delaria came over to do a show, and myself and Joe, the friend from school, she came to our house for Christmas because she didn't really have anywhere to go, so we kind of invited her for Christmas and she came to that. Right. So they're early 20s, and they have a very different idea of queer.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. I mean, in the last year, so I did, in my mid-30s, I thought that I was maybe trans, and I started to kind of explore that kind of, so I went to the doctor and stuff and kind of talked to them, and they were basically useless. And I read some Kate Bornstein stuff. I did kind of Kate's gender workbook, and I didn't pursue it because it didn't feel like it fitted particularly, but also it didn't feel like it fitted that I was a woman and so over the last year or so, I suppose, I think I kind of finally worked it out. And it's absolutely fine to just sit somewhere in the middle, and you don't have to pick a side.
And being with those younger people has been an influence, I guess, because certainly younger people now seem to be much more comfortable to be somewhere in that middle place without a label, without...
Yeah, I think for our generation, it's quite, you know, it feels quite kind of newfangled, and for them it feels quite obvious.
Yeah.
So my partner is Australian, which has, again, a much better queer scene than we have. I think they're way ahead of us. But also one of her best friends is from Berlin, and their partner is from Stockholm. So we went to a wedding. We went to a really gorgeous queer wedding in a children's camp. So they have all these kind of summer camps dotted around on the islands of Sweden. And when they don't use them, they hire them out. So you've got kind of a huge house and some smaller houses and some grounds, and then it's on the a lake. So it was just beautiful. My partner was officiating it, and the other guests were from Berlin and Stockholm, and they were, you know, incredibly queer. And so there were people with beards and breasts and, you know, chest surgery but not doing testosterone, and this real mixture of and family. A lot of the families were kind of three adults, because of the way that the welfare system works there, you can get maternity and paternity leave for three adults kind of looking after a child. So quite often for queer families, that makes that make real sense, I think. So they're brought up by three adults, and they're bringing up genderless children. So, you know, that we were with them for a week and you don't know their gender because they don't need one at that point. And I think that sort of stuff, I went away just, you know, with my eyes open, yeah, and just kind of like, ah, oh, finally, I found my people, you know. And so that was the kind of the beginning of it, I think. And
so a new community for you.
Yeah, totally. A new community, yeah, and an understanding of who I am and what I am and where I fit in the world. And that's been just gorgeous. And kind of, you know, some of the smaller drakes, just it's now becoming such kind of almost commonplace, you know, in those circles. So it's lovely. They will ask people's gender pronouns, you know, as soon as they meet them, they'll say, what's your name, what's your gender pronoun? Mm-hmm. And that's really nice. My partner is a therapist who does a lot of work with, she runs a company called queerhearted.com. She does a lot of sort of work with sex and tantra and BDSM, and so she works a lot in the trans communities as well, and kind of with, you know, people with body issues who may not feel that comfortable with their, yeah, with their bodies and stuff, which is not a problem I've ever had. So basically I'm quite kind of, you know, that world is kind of quite present in.
And it sounds like it's got a big future as well.
Yeah,
it sounds
so.
Like it's something really to,
yeah,
to grow.
It does feel like another coming out, you know. It feels like there is that moment when you work out, you know, what the fuck you are. And it's lovely. It does feel